live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning, 6:10 in the morning, 720 WGN. This is indeed the Steve Cochran Show. And who's tired of rain? Show of hands.
Yeah.
We are all tired of the rain. Hi, Tim. Please make it go away.
I'm working on it.
Can we go away now?
My
right
hand's
now.
Up, too. It's almost gone. We got a couple of sprinkles up in northeastern Lake County up near Waukegan. We got a shower, maybe a thunderstorm developing west of Rockford, but 90% of us, I want to say dry in terms of rain, but it's kind of moist and muggy out there this morning. Got a little bit of fog settling in, too. But I think the bulk of the rain is gone, and we will see some sun before the day's over with. We'll get up to around 70. So,
quite a storm last night. There was a big lightning show over the lake.
Yeah, we saw some heavy rains, too. We saw it was coming down at about an inch an hour, inch almost 2 inches an hour across the Fox River Valley. So DeKalb, Aurora area, back over towards, say, Inglewood, south side of the city, picked up anywhere from about a half inch of rain to nearly 2 inches of rain. So it got some pretty good downpours. Nothing severe. And now that pretty much is gone. Now we got a front coming through. And this is one of those fronts with a fairly brisk west wind, so even the lakeshore area today should make it up to near 70 degrees.
Oh, I like hearing that. I'm out of town this weekend. I'm going to Iowa, so at weekend here and weekend west. What do you think? Rain? Stay away?
Cool. It's going to be in the 50s here. It should be dry most of the weekend here. We could see a shower towards Sunday evening. Iowa, I'm expecting that it'll probably hit there a little earlier, more likely during the early part of Sunday. So the first part of the weekend in Iowa looks good, kind of cool like us, mid to upper 50s, but then a shower moves in during the day on Sunday.
Okay. Am I the only person that just, when the thunder was going off this morning, you just wanted to stay in bed? Just is it something about a thunderstorm that just makes you want to sleep?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to bed right now, as a matter of fact.
Tim, so. I know you do this so well for us, but we have a big favor to ask you. Our producer, Mary Sandberg, is going to be out of town next week. And if you could just hold off the rain in where, Mary?
Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
I looked at the next 20 days. It says rain every day.
I'll get back to you. I got to run. Bye.
There he goes.
That's not a good sign.
You know, hurricane season's about ready to start.
Yeah. Mary, it's going to be fine.
Yeah,
You'll be away. You'll be with your family.
Oh, no. Just Pat.
Time.
Oh, no. Just
oh,
Pat.
Together time. Yeah. See? So even if it rains, you'll be fine.
Uh-huh.
It'll be all good. Not a good sign, though, when Miguel
I know
says,
Dr. Mo,
I gotta go.
Dr. Mo says that tan skin isn't healthy, but I want tan skin.
Oh, I do, too. I do too. As long as you put on a little protector. I read a myth yesterday. We have to ask him about this too, that anything above 30 SPF, 30 is fine. You don't have to do the 50 or the 75 or the
Well, no,
yeah,
he said on Monday, I believe that 30 to 50
are
the highest
ones. Didn't he say that? Yeah.
Are the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything above that, cuz now they
have anything SPF. Above 50 you don't. That's just marketing.
And Mary, you know when it rains on vacation, that's just code for massage spa day.
Oh, you know what?
Or shopping.
Right,
shopping. You're
right. Yeah, but she's with Pat. He doesn't want to shop. Yeah, I could think of some other stuff you guys can do. We'll chat.
Give him a Benadryl and let him go to sleep.
She doesn't want him sleeping, man. It's vacation. Although maybe you do.
I actually wouldn't mind a little sleep myself.
Mary, there is going to be, I'm assuming, a lot of flooding, too. There's a lot of standing water, especially on Columbus, Lakeshore Drive, because all the rain that we had last night.
Yeah, the usual spots. I mean, the viaducts, and everybody knows those spots. And if you have the same commute every day, you know, oh, gosh, it's going to be high standing water at that area, And most of it actually has gone down. So overnight. I mean, I don't know. I heard those massive storms, so it was pretty nasty. But
there's something nice about sleeping in the rain. However, boy, last night was a big thunderstorm.
The sun is out, though.
I know.
How about this? The sky is blue over the Wrigley Building across the street.
What is that? The sun?
Yeah, I know. I'm stunned.
It looks fabulous.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Thailand humidity follows.
You know, okay, really but Mr. Listener, Buzzkill,
yeah,
just
glass
cut his mic.
Empty.
Yeah, like yesterday it was so humid.
Off.
It was really
Come
humid.
Come on,
yesterday.
This is that's okay. It's going to be a little warmer.
We'll take it. Partly sunny and 70. I will totally take that. 6:15. All right, Nick DiGilio is going to review
you
movies.
You sure not Steve Grzanich?
He's going to review movies.
Because I thought Nick did the news and Steve now will do the movies. I was confused.
People, our listeners knew what I meant. They're used to our segment.
Mary, what did you think?
Oh, let me shut her. Poor Mary. Mary's traffic. Oh, let's shut Steve up. Here we go. Oh, here we go.
Oh, listen, Mary's look at Miss Punch the Button.
That's right, baby.
Just cut everybody off.
On the board.
Yeah, I mean, after all, you could...
There we go. All right. Mary's Traffic is sponsored by Blaine's. Go ahead, Dave. Bring it back. That was you. Troublemaker. Mary's Traffic sponsored by Farm and Fleet. Let me turn her back
Hello?
On here. There
oh.
we go. Are we, go? Are we there, Mary? Okay. There
Hello?
You go. It's all you, baby.
I've been trying to talk for 5 minutes.
What's going on with the roads?
Oh, I'll tell you. Hello? Stop
okay,
it.
Sorry.
Take her off the boards. Oh, it's going to be one of those.
Hang
days.
On, Bear. We got this under control.
Yeah, I could tell.
It's
yeah,
all you. This is great. I promise.
Here he is, the Wizard of Wall Street himself.
The name is Lee Gates. The show is Money Monster. Without risk, there is no reward.
Man up.
Who's that guy on camera two?
You want to complain about it? Go ahead.
Who is it? Anybody know?
Was it a union thing?
Whoever's in there, turn the cameras on.
Turn the cameras off, Patty. Turn them on,
what
Patty.
To do?
Turn them on.
Put it up.
Take it out. Put it on.
How do I know it won't blow up?
Because I have the detonator.
My thumb comes off this trigger, then we all explode.
Jodie Foster directs it. George Clooney and Julia Roberts star in it. Ugh. I never thought I'd see a George Clooney movie where I go, I can't see that. I don't know. Nick's going to tell me it's fine. Go ahead, Nick. Tell me it's fine. Nick DiGiulio joins us now.
Well, I haven't seen it yet.
Well, go ahead. Tell me it's fine.
It's fine.
I feel like I've seen it. You know, what's the name of I'm forgetting his name. I'm spacing on the CNBC guy that yells at everybody at 10 o'clock.
Oh, I always forget his name, too.
The bald dude.
He looks like Dean.
He's on the Today Show. Kramer. Used to be Kramer and Kudlow. Kramer. Not Kramer from Seinfeld, Kramer from screaming CNBC. And he's got the button that he hits for his recommendations and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that's Clooney's character. Julia Roberts is the aggravated producer of the show who can't get the talent to just do what she wants and stop aggravating her. And Jodie Foster directs it. You know, it feels like Phone Booth. It feels like Kramer. I don't know. Do I need this movie?
I'm looking forward to it only because, you know, Jodie Foster directed it. Jodie Foster has directed some really, really terrific movies. And I think she's a great director. And I'm also kind of thrilled that she cast a relative unknown as the guy who takes over the show.
The guy with the Jersey accent?
Yeah, Jack O'Connell is the actor. And, you know, not a lot of people know who he is. And that part could have went, I mean, you got George Clooney, you got Julia Roberts, you got Dominic West. These are big names. And, you know, the critical part of this movie went to this relatively unknown actor. And I think that says a lot about, you know, Jodie Foster not caring to have star power in, like, one of the major roles in the movie.
Do we know who this guy is? Theater guy? Bit part guy?
He's done some movies. Yeah, he's done some movies here and there, but he's not. I mean, he clearly isn't, you know, like, nobody recognizes who this guy is. I mean, this is a high-profile movie directed by a movie star and starring two of the biggest movie stars on Earth. And then right in the middle of this thing, the catalyst is this unknown actor that nobody's seen. And you know, these day and age, you know, it's a risk for someone to cast somebody that you don't know. And, you know, and I would imagine that Jodie Foster probably had to fight for this guy because studios want people with names. Studios want box office draws. So
it's called Money Monster, and it's out this weekend. What else is coming up?
A horror movie with Kevin Bacon called The Darkness. And evidently, he plays there's a family. He's the head of the family, and they go on a vacation to Grand Canyon. To the Grand Canyon,
and all of Grand Canyon is haunted. Or they come back to their house, and there's people in their cupboards.
That's right. They bring back the spirit of some of the dead mules. I don't know.
Right.
People.
Right. Tourists. Tourists come back with them. Ghosts of tourists come back and haunt their cupboards.
Yeah, and this one is not being screened for the critics, so you know. That's a good sign.
Not great. Not great.
Now, the other two that are coming out, the other two that are infinitely more interesting than the two biggies. There's a film called The Family Fang, F-A-N-G, The Family Fang. Second movie directed by Jason Bateman. His first one was a terrific movie called Bad Words. And he's in this one with Nicole Kidman, and they play siblings who grew up in a very, very strange family. Their parents were weird performance artists who made them participate in weird performance art that takes place on the street. And so they're into tricking people. So now they're adults. They've been estranged. Christopher Walken is the father of the family. And they disappear. The mother and father, Christopher Walken, the other actress, disappear. And everybody is convinced that they're dead. And Nicole Kidman and Jason Bateman, who know that they're just these weird performance artists, don't think they're dead and are trying to find them. It looks terrific. It's based on this book, I guess, is like a big national bestseller. And Bateman is in it. Nicole Kidman is in it. Christopher Walken, and Bateman directed it. And this one, I'm most intrigued.
I don't get it, though. Is it funny? Is it drama? Is it horror? What is it?
No, it's a dark comedy.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's about a truly dysfunctional family, and about how parents basically ruin their kids. And as they grow up, they're trying to come to terms with that. And all of a sudden the parents disappear, and they have to figure out whether or not it's one of their performance art things or whether it's real. And it looks, I see the trailer for it. It looks great. Like I said, Bateman, did you see Bad Words?
Yeah, I like Bad Words. Bad Words is a completely polarizing movie, but I liked it.
I did too. I thought it was great, and I thought, Bateman did a really good job directing, and that was the first movie out of the game.
It is a movie that is filled with several reprehensible characters and an unbelievably sweet kid, and it works. So.
Yeah, it really does. It's terrific. So I'm looking forward to seeing his next film, and I think Bateman has proved himself to be a good director.
What's High Rise?
High Rise is based on a tremendous science fiction book by J.G. Ballard. J.G. Ballard, for those people who might not know, tremendous writer, wrote the book Crash, which David Cronenberg made a great movie out of. And he also wrote Empire of the Sun, and the kid character that Christian Bale plays, that's J.G. Ballard. Like, he really was in a POW camp during World War II. So the kid that he portrays in Empire of the Sun back then, that's J.G. Ballard. He went on to be a great writer and a great sci-fi writer. High Rise stars Tom Hiddleston as this doctor. I read the book. The book is great. He plays this doctor who is in this sort of futuristic high-rise building that's owned by Jeremy Irons, and it's populated with a bunch of very weird, crazy characters. And as the floors go up, the higher that you get into the high-rise, the more affluent and pretentious the people who live are. And there's kind of a revolt that happens from the first floor up to go up. It's a very strange book. If you're familiar with the way J.G. Ballard writes, it's out there. It's really risky material. And if they do the book justice, if they're faithful to the book, it's going to be one of the most uncomfortable movies that people are going to sit through, but really, really rewarding. I hear mixed things about this, and this is the kind of thing that you're going to hear because it's so polarizing. I mean, the movie Crash, James Spader and Rosanna Arquette, Holly Hunter, was about people who like to have sex while they crashed cars.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the book was about. And
story.
Yeah. You hate those cliches, don't you?
Steve? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's really funny. I've read the book Crash a couple of times, and I love the movie, of course. I remember I was on the L one time, and I was reading Crash, and there was a woman sitting next to me, and she was she was reading over my shoulder. And I kind of felt her reading over my shoulder, and I kind of looked over at her, and she got up and moved. She got up and moved because of what she read in the book. Because
she thought you were going to have sex with her or something. Or,
well, I think she was just repulsed by the fact that someone would read this. Like, she read like two sentences.
If you're reading over my shoulder and you're reading my book, you don't get to be repulsed by what I'm reading. That's a rule.
Yeah. Well, I just thought it was amusing. I thought it was funny. I mean, she got up and just left. I was like, okay.
Actually,
cool. But anyway.
Nick's off selling the story. That's how he met his second wife. That was
the actual
story. Yes.
That's
right.
Yeah.
All right. So High Rise and Fantasy Fang. Those are your two, or Family Fang, Fantasy
Fang. Family Fang.
Family Fang. Those are your two must finds. And Money Monster, We Don't Know, and The Darkness, You Can Skip.
Yeah, The Darkness is going to be terrible. Money Monster, I hope it's good. I'm going to see it on Saturday. By the way, the High Rise and the Family Fang are both opening exclusively at the Music Box, but they are available on video on demand. So if you're interested and you just want to see it in the comfort of your own home, just order it on your video on demand. It's streaming now. So you can see both of those brand new movies at home if you don't feel like going to the Music Box.
All right, thanks, buddy.
We'll come back, man.
Get the big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
Ryan Dempster.
There's a 1-1 to Freeman. Oh, he caught it right into the palm of Dempster's glove.
Ooh, that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go Cubs!
That was outstanding.
A little bit of early Demps today. We got a lot going on, and Demps is nice enough to get up early and do the show. We'll get a traffic update and then go to Ryan, but I am curious if he's ever dove face first for a ball into the stands with the idea that you're going to try to make that catch one way or another, and the hopeful that, you know, they hope that at least one fat guy in the front row will, you know, play the carom and bounce you off before you hit your face.
Just
on the
cushion
seat.
Your fall.
Right. So Ryan Dempster joins us now. Demps, as much as the Max Scherzer 20 strikeout thing is a huge deal, and it is, we're seeing just as many replays of Todd Frazier's face first fly into the stands, you know, face plant against a seat. That must have hurt you just watching it.
You got to admire a guy like that. If you're especially, you know, it's one thing any teammate, but a pitcher, when a guy's going after a ball like that for you, after he gets stitched up, you're taking him to a nice steak dinner somewhere. I don't know, you know, if they flew in last night from Texas, wherever they went, or if they're at home. He needs a nice, that pitcher needs to go out and treat him to something really nice there because he's laying out for him.
I don't think it's steak, though, because of the swelling of his lip and maybe some dental damage. Maybe soup, possibly soup shakes. Through a straw for
it's
a couple of days.
Athletes, protein shakes is where it's at these days.
Well, that's so. Right. That's it. I want to get to the Cubs, obviously, but Scherzer's 20 strikeouts. I mean, come on, 20 strikeouts. That's a small club.
Yeah, that's, you know, I've been, I think my career high was like 11, so half that. And I felt like I punched out everybody on the other team.
Sure.
And to think 20, it's really remarkable. And what he did last night, I mean, you know, there's different dominance in different ways, but he threw 23 balls. He almost struck out as many people as Baldy threw.
That's crazy.
It's incredible what he did last night. And, you know, he's proved time and time again why he's an ace in this league. No two no-hitters last year. And to go out there and do that last night. You know what I love, man? Sometimes people on the field, something happens in the moment. You know, a guy strikes out 2,000, 3,000 guys, and they just kind of, you know, let's just move on. He enjoyed that moment. He knew he had 20 punch-outs right there. He fist-pumped it, and I love that. It shows the passion that he has. He plays a lot of it on his sleeve. It was awesome to see him go out there against his former team, too. They're thinking, wow, we stink right now, and how much would we love to have kept that guy?
Well, and fans love that, too. I wish more players knew that. Fans, you know, you don't have to be a jerk about it, but fans love an appropriate celebration. Not the sack dance after you're down 44-0 on an NFL Sunday, you know, or the guy that scores an accidental touchdown and acts like he just won the Super Bowl. Those are just two football analogies. But you strike out 20, you ought to be celebrating.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you work so hard. It's not just about that game. That, you know, as a kid, you dream of doing things like that. You envision them happening, and to get that close and then to actually have it happen was pretty remarkable. And for him, you know, to have a chance to go out there and actually get to break the record. You know, I know Woody's last batter was 20. Randy Johnson's last batter was his 20th. So to actually have that chance, you know, an incredible performance. And you know, hats off to Dusty. I know he gets rid hard for letting his starters extend themselves, but Max Scherzer works as hard as anybody in baseball. He gets after. He's in great shape. He gave up that solo homer to lead off the inning, and he left them out there to try and get the record. He got it. You know, awesome.
Yeah, he had a chance to break it. The last batter ended up grounding out. But, you know, I got to say, Ryan, having been at Wrigley Field that day in 1998 when Woody struck out 20, as good as Scherzer was last night, and you can certainly make a great case for either, that was still as dominant a performance as I think you'll ever see. I mean, he gave up, what, one infield single in that game. And by the end, Houston had no clue against Woody that day.
To me, I've seen that game. I've watched it. I watched it unfold actually live, and then I've watched it on replay many a times. And listen, man, I know Nolan Ryan threw 7 no-hitters. I know there's been perfect games out there, those things. That game by Terry, most dominant baseball game ever pitched, and that's not a knock on anybody else. But you want to talk about those guys had no chance. I remember there was an at-bat that he was facing Dave Clark, the outfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Clark was in a 1-0 game. It was a really close game, and Dave Clark's a notoriously good fastball hitter. And Woody got 3-0 to him and threw three Nintendo game curveballs for strike. It was like, strike one, strike two. And the look on Dave Clark's face, like, oh, well, boys, I guess we're all striking out today. It was just, he was so filthy, man. It was just game stuff.
I love Nintendo game curveballs. That's tremendous. Dave.
All right, so let's see. Scherzer's teammate, Steven Strasburg, gets the big contract with Washington, which, of course, prompts the question to Jake Arrieta, what about beyond next year? What's going to happen? And he said...
Wait, you be Bruce Levine, I'll be Arrieta.
Okay,
ask me.
Okay, Jake, are you going to re-sign with the Cubs?
Now, the question was,
will you give them a hometown discount? How about a hometown discount?
No.
Okay.
That was the conversation.
That was the answer. All right, Ryan, you were in this position, similar position, after the 2008 season, and you signed a four-year contract to remain a member of the Cubs. Just kind of take us inside the mind of a player who's in that situation, who is looking at potential free agency, but obviously is in a place where he's in his comfort zone and wants to get things worked out.
I think, you know, it's very few guys get to free agency. And then to get to free agency and be one of the elite guys is even harder. And then to get to free agency and be the elite guy doesn't happen very often. I mean, you know, talking about dreaming opportunities up for yourself in your, you know, to take care of your family for the rest of their life, and just to see what happens. And it's a situation where, you know, you got to always wonder, is the grass greener on the other side? And, you know, I can go somewhere, you know, you're Zach Greinke, you sign instead of LA, you sign in Arizona for $200 million. And at the end of it all, sure, you got $200 million. Whether it was 180 from one place and 200 from another, are you happier there? Is that gonna what makes you the happiest? And I think, you know, Jake's very honest about it. You know, he's been honest about his statements and saying, you know, he doesn't believe he needs to take a hometown discount. He wasn't a homegrown player here. It's not like he was drafted a Cub and came up a Cub. But I think at the end of the day, that Theo and Jed and the Ricketts family are gonna do what they can to try and keep Jake. I know that. We love having him with the Cubs, but he's also got to make those decisions for himself. So as a player, you know, it's a lot of different things, and you have people in your ear, and you have an agent in your ear, and you have, you know, different things. Well, you can break the all-time record, or you could do this, or you could do that, and, you know, then you start throwing those high dollar amounts and turning them down, and really, really, you know, you have to sit there and be willing to do that. And like Jake said, you know, hey, I'm going to be fine regardless of what happens. If I you know, something happens and I don't get a huge contract, I'll still have lots of money. So he's got great choices and great opportunity in front of him, and he's going to get a ton of money, more money than most people could ever dream of having. So he deserves it. You know, in today's market, the way it is for pitching, he's worked his tail off. He works so hard. He puts everything into it, and he's going to get rewarded for it.
Yeah, and the thing is, and fans get frustrated when, you know, you go, well, hold on a second, things are good here. What do you mean you need to go out and see if you can make $200 million as opposed to $180 million? This can all be solved if the Cubs go out and win the World Series this year. Because you go out and win the World Series this year, he's not up until the end of 17. Then you do the renegotiate. You pay him whatever you want to pay him. There's extra money involved for everybody. There's less pressure on the Cubs. Maybe he takes $20 million less, whatever the number is. I have a feeling this is all going to work out. But you know me, I never have doubts about the Cubs.
Yeah, right.
Hold on, I'm waiting for the lightning to strike because it could be at any moment.
Absolutely.
All right, Dempsey, and Sox continue to roll as well, with or without Todd Frazier's teeth. This little speed bump will pass, and don't take two in a row. Even I mentioned this before you came on, Demps. The most diehard Cubs fan had to have a moment yesterday after they lost two, even though they're 18 over 500, where they went, uh-oh. So wake up this morning, the sun came up, it's going to be fine, and the big season will continue, and we always appreciate your time, Demps.
Yeah, absolutely. It will continue. These are two really good teams playing great baseball, and everybody's going to have a two, probably a three, and maybe even a four-game losing streak during the year. Baseball is exciting in the city of Chicago, whether you're on the north side or south side right now, and it's great, and looking forward to both these teams doing what they're doing.
All right, buddy. Be well. That's Ryan Dempsey.
You got it, guys.
I remember when I was playing wiffle ball with my cousin Kurt.
Yeah.
And there was a pop-up, and I went and dove for the pop-up, and I almost hit the tree in his yard.
Oh.
There was a tree there, and it could have been just as painful as what Todd Frazier went through.
Was it the thin yellow bat or the big, thick orange bat?
Oh, okay. No, the big, thick orange bat. That's not wiffle ball. It's just, you know, it's amateur hour.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Tom Brokaw.
Seven 11 in the morning. Tom Brokaw joins us in just a second here. And in a remarkable career, and really a terrific author, which I think he's underappreciated for. I think the greatest legacy Tom Brokaw has and will have is the fact that he's shown such a light on the greatest generation. Helped coin that term, frankly. And I believe if not for Brokaw, we wouldn't have the great appreciation, fascination, and thrill of, in particular, our World War II vets, of which my father, you know, was a member of that class. Tom Brokaw joins us now. We'll talk about his new book in a second. But I do thank you for that. And I know I tell you that every time I talk to you, but it meant a lot to me.
Oh, thanks, Steve. And it's always been a pleasure to be with you. I must say, I wrote the book in 1998. And now, 18 years later, there's not a week that goes by that two or three people don't come up to me somewhere in an airport or on the street. And some of them get quite emotional and say, I didn't understand my dad until I read your book. Or the old guy,
right.
The old ladies say, you know, thank you, Mr. Brokaw. We were just doing what was expected of us. So it's very, very touching to me. And I'll feel connected to them forever. When I wrote the phrase, the greatest generation, I did not expect it to become part of the language, but it's now used without quotation marks even anymore.
I should be very proud of it. Well, so let's talk about the obvious here, because this is the nature of the book. How are you feeling?
I'm actually in remission, and I'm very grateful for that. I have to monitor it very carefully. I get up every day and take a chemotherapy pill. I took one this morning. That one alone cost $500. That puts it in perspective in some degree about how expensive everything is, and in addition to a lot of others. I did have spinal damage because it's a cancer that invades your bone marrow as well, and I had four fractures in my spine. That still is an issue for me that I'm working on, and I think the therapy is getting me back to where I'm at least comfortable with it. So I'm just, you know, I'm a lucky guy yet, and I'm very happy to have the resources that I do and the treatment that I have and to be able to continue, and it makes me so aware of what so many other families go through.
Well, it's good of you to say, but in the book, A Lucky Life Interrupted, you deal with a very real scare that anybody has, regardless of their position in life, when they get a diagnosis like that. So educate us for a second. Multiple myeloma, a blood cancer, right?
It is. It's the. It is not a prevalent cancer. It strikes people, mostly males, in their 50s and 60s, although it's now percolating down into the younger generations as well. And what happens is that a particular kind of blood cell goes rogue and it invades bone marrow. I had a hole in my pelvis at the time I was diagnosed. I didn't realize that. I had a lot of back pain. It turns out I had four lower back fractures at that time. So what I say to men of my age, and it really does hit men more than it does women, if you get a backache, it's not just because you're, you know, overextending on a golf swing or that you were in playing tennis or whatever, go get a blood test because that's how they find out whether or not you've got multiple myeloma.
Dave, your mom passed from this at a time when the technology isn't what it is today. What are your recollections of it in your own life?
Well, I mean, she lived with it for a number of years with and there was some new medication. I believe a drug called Revlimid is
that's the one I took today.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
And I remembered.
And that's the encouraging part for multiple myeloma. When I was diagnosed, I said immediately, how long do I have? And the guy said, well, statistically, 5 years, but we're making so much progress. There are new drugs coming online all the time. I think you're going to be able to beat that, and that, in fact, has been the case. Since I've been in remission, two new drugs have been developed that if I fall out of remission, they say, we think these will get you back into remission. So it's very heartening, the work that is being done at Dana-Farber, at the Mayo Clinic, at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and at MD Anderson. On multiple myeloma is very encouraging.
The book, again, is called A Lucky Life Interrupted. As I always say, get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. Pass it on to a friend. Because it not only details some of the great moments in Brokaw's career, it also talks about what everybody listening to our voices now knows. You either are someone or you love someone who has dealt with cancer. And Brokaw is very honest and very real about what it feels like to be that person. I think it's a little different, though, in your case, because everybody knows you. And, you know, you come from a generation, and as men, we don't like to be weak in any way, shape, or form. So when people
That's true. One of the things that happened to me is that I do have a high threshold for pain. I inherited it from my father, who was the toughest guy I'd ever known. We used to say he was going to bleed to death through his hands because he was a heavy equipment operator, and he was always getting banged up. And he'd come home and just run a little cold water over what looked to me to be an open wound of some
kind.
So people would say to me, the doctors would say, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, Tom, which pain level? And I'd say, oh, about a 4. My daughter, the doctor, would stand behind me and hold up 6 fingers. And they said, we really need her around you because she knows you better than you know you.
But, you know, it's a good point to make because we as men, and women do this as well, but be honest with your doctor, be honest with yourself, and be honest with yourself when it comes to these twinges and things like back pain and different things in your body. That inner voice will tell you this is a bigger deal. And go see your doctor and get tested.
Yeah, back, and don't be afraid to answer, ask any question. I mean, in my case, when I got to New York, a bunch of specialists came in and said, hey, Tom, look, we're really ahead of the game here. You're going to be back on your feet in 6-9 months, and then they walked out. And no one said to me at the beginning about fatigue is going to become a big part of your life because this, how we medicate you is going to knock you down. No one said you have to be really, really cautious about getting infection. I just had a bronchial condition last week, and I had to jump all over it right away because the resistance is way down. And right off the bat, I had no idea that the bone pain would be so great. I'll tell you one quick story about that, though, how I'm helped by other ways. We had a terrible winter in New York in 2013, the year that I was diagnosed, and I would force myself out of the apartment every morning, shuffle half a block to a coffee shop to get a bagel and a cup of coffee, and it'd be sleeting and icing, and I'd walk by this bus stop, had this enormous poster of Tom Brady staring moodily down the street advertising UGG boots, and all the women waiting for the bus would be mooning over him. I'd get up to it. I'd get up to the poster, look at it, and drop the F-bomb on him, and then just keep on going, and that would really help me go through the rest of the day.
All right, I know we're short on time, but I got to ask you one journalist question. Overnight last night, we get more backpedaling from Trump. Obviously, Hillary has a number of questions to answer as well. Maybe I'm getting old, but I've never seen a time, with the exception maybe of our friend Chuck Todd, with the reluctance to ask the major follow-up questions and sit-downs with the candidates because one happens to be loud and a bully. Are we in trouble for that?
Well, you know, actually, that's not entirely fair. If you look at Chuck's last interview with Donald Trump about how he went after him on his taxes and when he was going to release him, when we went after him on Meet the Press on his...
No, I said with the exception of Chuck Todd. In other words, Chuck's the only one that is doing it.
Yeah, well, I think that that's fair. The problem now is that the arena has been so expanded because of social media, Twitter and all the blog sites and the rallies that he has, it seems like they're not being held accountable. But if anyone were to really do due diligence and go back through how he has been questioned, you'll find out there are enormous gaps in his answers. That's also true of Hillary, by the way, on both sides.
Right.
So, it's a different arena now that we're dealing with, and I think that the individual voters have a real obligation to themselves to, as I often say, you've got to spend as much time deciding which candidate you want to support as you would in what flat-screen television you're going to buy.
Yeah, at least. I know you got to run and talk to other people, but I wish you nothing but the best. You know how big a fan I am, and I always appreciate your time. The book's called A Lucky Life Interrupted, and Tom's going to be around a long time to continue to write, educate us, and be a part of the discussion, and that's good news for everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys. I always love coming to the show.
Take care. That's Tom Brokaw, and we do that. So, Dave, we were interrupted there briefly. Yeah. So your mom is taking the same drug that Brokaw is taking.
Right.
But in the process of taking the same drug, those drugs change in strength and vitality or whatever the word may be for prescriptions over the years. But she fought it for 7 years?
I believe about 7 years. And there's no question that that drug prolonged her life.
Right.
But the thing that I think really rung true was when Tom mentioned the $500 per pill cost.
Yeah, about that.
Because I remember my parents talking about the enormous cost of the medication, and it puts a real strain on you with all the if you got the Medicare Part B or Part C or whatever
right.
it is,
right.
it still is very difficult. It's very these treatments are very, very expensive. But it did help prolong her life, no question.
And Pat, when we come back, I want to bring this up to Pat Brady, who's here, and we can bring it up to Edelstein as well as we talk politics this hour. But prescription costs, it's been addressed by Clinton to some extent, but it really hasn't been a main campaign issue. There's every reason in the world, Mary, and you know this because your dad died last year. Your dad was on meds. We're all on meds at some point. And you have to find a way where the prescription and drug companies can make a reasonable profit and make the money they need for research and development. But when you start talking about profit, which is 50 to 100 times over the cost of the medication, come on.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I think he's a good, you know, good man. And I really think, you know, probably we'll come out with something that's going to be good, I hope. Otherwise, I'll just continue on the path that I continue on.
To pretend we're unified as a party after coming through a very bruising primary, which just ended like a week ago, to pretend we're unified without actually unifying, then we go into the fall at half strength. This election's too important to go into an election at half strength.
My prediction is Pat Brady joins us from Next Generation Strategies. My prediction is they're going to come out in kumbaya today. Do you think it'll be a first step or a full kumbaya?
It'll be a half kumbaya. He's Congressman Ryan, the Speaker of the House, one of the finest people, I think, in the Congress, smartest, forward-thinking. There's really not much he shares with Donald Trump. I mean, Ryan's a conservative. Trump's not. But they have to at this point because the party's kind of splitting apart.
Well, he has to because that goes with his position.
Right.
There's a lot of Republicans who won't. And
including this Republican.
Yeah, including you. And the question is, what do you do with your vote then? And, you know, if I get to ask one question more than anything else now, it's that. Okay, Steve, I get it. You don't like Trump. I get it. You think Hillary's a liar. So who are you voting for?
Well, as a delegate, I'm still a delegate to the convention. My vote goes to Steve Cochran.
Right.
I will be nominating Steve Cochran at the convention.
Which would be the greatest thing I've ever heard in any convention if Pat Brady gets the mic and does that in the first day.
Do I get free golf for all next summer?
Yeah, you get free golf for life.
Okay, I'll do it. Don't tempt me. You know, I don't know. And there's libertarian talk. Gary Johnson's the candidate there. It's probably too late for a third party candidate, but a lot of people are struggling with that right now.
Chuck Todd was, you know, voiced actual frustration the other day when he said, why isn't somebody hijacking the libertarian side of this with a legitimate third party candidacy and nobody's stepping forward? It's almost like everybody's still in a bit of denial here. It can't be Trump and Hillary. There's got to be somebody else. Let me know when I wake up.
I think there is some denial, but I think there are people that just usually, you try to be accommodating, you try to support the party, but this guy is so far removed from Republican ideology for a guy like me to support him, he's not going to do it, which I hate saying. I've never not voted for a Republican since 1980, but the reality is I cannot support him. And I think I'm saying that because I think I speak for others that feel the same way.
And for those people confused that don't know Pat's actual age, it doesn't mean he voted for Jimmy Carter. 80 was the first time you were eligible to vote.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's the actual truth. Yeah, I'm just trying to help you with your own situation.
Thank you.
Cut down on the phone calls you'll get later. You know, maybe it's always been this way for me. I know people hear what they want to hear, but I'm just tired of the BS. And I know you have to subscribe and mostly support one party or the other if you want to get a particular chunk of an agenda done. But I still am idealistic and foolish enough to believe that somebody is going to try to push for what's right for everybody. And the sermon remains the same. When you're president for everybody. You're not president from one party or the other. And I certainly don't see that from Hillary, and I certainly don't see that from Trump. Though Trump could be president of Mars at this point because he'll change his opinion to whatever you want to hear.
Hillary's just as bad. If you've followed her for the last 30 years that she's been in the public eye, the one thing that always struck me is she consistently exercises terrible judgment.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible judgment.
Yeah, she's a really bad
candidate. Benghazi backwards to the special prosecutor in Whitewater at travel. Anything that she puts her hands on at critical moments, she screws up, and it scares me to death. But, you know, right now, if you look at the Electoral College, which is all that really matters, not the national polls, but state by state, it's Electoral College. It's not a direct election.
And you
got
to get to 270.
270, and right now she's at about 347. And this myth that Trump is somehow going to attract this different kind of Reagan coalition is not true. Those people are already in the party. So there's another phenomenon we talked about last night. I call it the she'll kill me if I vote for him phenomenon.
Yeah, you know what? Hold that, because I definitely want you to talk about that. I'm glad you reminded me. Eric Adelstein will join us as well in a few moments at 7:30. We're back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
My husband and I have released 33 years of tax returns. So you got to ask yourself, why does he want to release them? Yeah, well, we're going to find out.
Frankly, I think we have good reason to believe that there's a bombshell in Donald Trump's taxes. Every time he's asked about his taxes, he dodges and delays and says, well, we're working on it.
As far as my return, I want to file it. Except for many years, I've been audited every year. 12 years or something like that. Every year, they audit me. So I can't do it until the audit is finished.
Well, we're waiting.
Oh, man, hand me a shovel every time he opens his mouth. Donald Trump changed his position on two major things last night. You may remember I, Donald J. Trump, am insisting on a ban of all Muslims entering America. Well, overnight, you may have missed the news. He's now saying, it's a suggestion. You know, if you got other things going on. And when it comes to tax returns, every candidate since Nixon, you might remember Nixon had a couple of problems. Every candidate since Nixon has sent their tax returns out into the world for public inspection. So, in other words, Donald Trump hasn't risen to the ethical level of Richard Nixon in regards to tax returns.
And just another point, Tim, I don't know who's advising him, but if you say you've been getting audited for the last 12 years, that's usually a red flag. Well, things aren't going so well.
And I don't know from accounting, which is why I have an accountant. But I do know that there's been no accountant that I'm aware of who stood up and said, well, the audit doesn't have anything to do with it. You can release it. It doesn't have anything to do with it. There's nobody telling Donald Trump, oh, Mr. Trump, oh, baby, wait until we're done with the audit before you release this sucker. That's ridiculous. If we're going to hit Hillary on lying, and she deserves to be hit on lying, Trump needs to be hit on lying as well.
But you need to give her some jokes or something, because there's so much material that she has to work with, but she never, that last clip, I'm not sure how effective that is when she could actually probably be more effective with some humor.
No, she had nothing. That's where you roll out Jimmy Fallon to come out and do maybe a musical bit or some kind. You know what I'm saying?
That's what it needs. Vaudeville.
We need to punch that up for her. At 7:43, Eric Adelstein joins us as well. But first, Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
And Pat_Brady on social media. Good morning, Eric.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Why are you in Flint, Michigan?
Continuing my nationwide search for Donald Trump's conscience.
You think it's in the water there?
I have not seen it. No, in all seriousness, we're talking to some people that have been affected by this, something that should never happen in any country, let alone the United States, where government decision and children ended up getting poisoned. So,
right.
Terrible situation, and we're going to be talking to some people who were affected by it. But it's a bad thing, and hopefully it's getting fixed.
All right, so let's go in reverse order here. How does Hillary Clinton as a candidate exploit the fact that Donald Trump won't release his tax returns, and now suddenly the Muslim thing is just a suggestion?
Well, I think there's so much attention on this race. I'm not sure Hillary has to be the one exploiting it. I think you guys are doing it. I think the press will do it. We'll continue to do it. I agree with Pat. I don't know anybody who's been audited 12 years in a row if there isn't something to be seen there. Now, I'm not so sure there's a bombshell. I sort of have a theory that it just points out fraud is, that he's not worth $10 billion.
We lost him. Bad phone line. All right, let's reconnect there.
He found Trump's conscience.
You know, I agree with that point right there, that he's a fraud on what he's worth, because he went from $4 to $10 billion. And he's going to have to come up with about $800 million. Quickly to run this campaign. So we'll see if he, and right now the $49 million he's spending is a loan to the campaign.
That's the other thing we haven't talked about, how he's suddenly reversed order. He's actively seeking donations, and he's not even that quiet about it now. Remember, he was going to run the campaign himself.
They have a joint fundraising. They can raise $30,000 at a pop now.
He's also saying that that was for the primary. Now that I'm a regular candidate, I'm going to accept public fund, or I'm going to accept federal funding and matching funds and all the other stuff that goes on. Good God. Come on, people. Isn't it time? Isn't it?
We've done our job, Steve.
You know.
But we're just not working.
Screaming at the trees, man.
The
Donald Trump, do you think you had something to do with Budweiser changing the name of their beer for the summer to America?
I think so. They're so impressed with what our country will become that they decided to do this before the fact.
They got
to
get a taste of that.
Thank God we still have great journalists like that to ask all the tough questions. Just a circus of idiots. It's 7:50. Eric Edelstein, live from Flint, Michigan this morning. And Pat Brady live in studio. All right, so Trump-Hillary continued. Pat Brady, let me go to you on Springfield. What are we hearing?
What we're seeing is the rank and file of Democrats and Republicans have two or three working groups going. They are trying to get a budget agreement, and credit to all of them that are working hard towards doing that. And I think they might get it done, but the flying the ointment here is the speaker doesn't seem to have any interest in a budget deal. And if he gets this presented to him and kills it, then it's going to be on him. But I suspect what he'll do is what he's done in the past, is he will reject this, then pass an unbalanced budget and tell the governor to line item veto it.
Eric, what are you hearing, even though I know you're on the road?
Well, Pat's closer to it than I am, but continuing his just blame the speaker for everything. But
well, you can throw me in on that, too. I'll blame the speaker for everything.
Look, I putting aside partisanship, I'm hopeful they're getting closer. This is a terrible situation. It needs to get resolved. And everybody needs to put their big boy pants on and get it done, because it's gone on way too long. And I'm hopeful that these working groups will lead to an outcome that's at least better than what we have right now.
The various coalitions, factions, and groups that are getting louder about this are the ultimate breaking point or not?
I think that the Black Caucus, whose constituents are primarily affected by the social servants, are really exerting some influence. But I'll kidding aside, all partisans, people are really trying to get this done down there. And I believe that a lot of people think it can get done, but we'll wait and see. We got a couple more weeks.
And pressure from you should continue as voters, because you can't just let this percolate, because it will get to your door. It has in some forms already that you may not recognize, but you have to keep pressure up on the people in Springfield. Those are the people that were elected to support and represent you. Hold on. All right, I'm over it. Eric and Pat, I think we need to give the teachers union and the city credit for finding a way to put this strike talk off for a period of time. Am I being too kind, Eric?
No, I think they, cooler heads prevail, to use a cliche. And I think it was in the interest, so often we don't talk about the interests of the school children. I think the teachers, from pressure from the rank and file, who said, we don't want to blow the end of the school year. Let us finish this thing. And I think knowing that the city's hands are so tied by what's going on in Springfield, I think it was a good outcome. It's easy to bash, and we bash a lot, but we should give credit where credit's due. Now, hopefully this will continue as they talk into the summer and they can resolve something and not have a strike in the fall.
Agree with that, Mr. Brady?
Yes, I do agree with everything Eric just said there, which might be ring a bell.
I'd be careful, Eric. That sounds like a prosecutor's move to me. It sounds like he was setting you up for further questioning.
And hey, Steve, can I go back to Trump on one thing?
Oh, yeah, of course. Please, let me give you all the time you need.
Nobody's talking about – there is a strategy that would make him the favorite in this race, which would be repealing the 15th and 19th Amendments to the Constitution. If you took the right to vote away from women and the right to vote away from people of color and go back to that kind of 19th century – politics, he could win this race. I mean, that's his one hope, I think.
I think what you just brought up should be, at least brought up in a parallel for people that are concerned about the Second Amendment going away. There's a better chance that 15 and 19 go away as opposed to the second this country, just so we're clear.
Hey, Eric, I got a question for you. You're an Ivy League guy. I got a theory talking to all my guy buddies that live in the suburbs. It's called the "she will kill me if I do that" theory. That anybody, any male that wants to support, vote, or write a check to Donald Trump will respond. And I probably heard this 15 times in the last 2 weeks. If I do that, she will kill me.
In other words, the woman in your life who hates Trump will murder you if you support Trump.
Yeah, I've heard some anxiety on our side that it can work the other way, which is the underreporting in polls, because dudes like that won't want to say I'm voting for him, but will go into the voting booth. It's sort of the reverse of when female candidates began to win and women actually said,
what the hell, it doesn't have to be all a bunch of guys all the time, but they wouldn't tell their husbands they're going to vote for the woman, that there could be the reverse of that. But I agree with you, Pat. I think there's going to be a lot of that social pressure.
Well, but didn't set it up right. It's usually the guy would say, I cannot vote for Hillary, but right. if I do some, but
yeah.
They just do not like Hillary.
But despite right. the social pressure, though, it's you alone, male or female, in that voting booth or voting
Well, not
kiosk.
In this case. The wife or the girlfriend hates well. Trump so much they'll follow your husband or boyfriend in.
I mean, I do think she wins, and I think it's an electoral landslide. But someone told me they were in an airport, and there was a woman, and they were talking about this, and her response was, oh, you know, I'm going to vote for Trump. He's going to be fun. You know, and how chilling is that?
Oh, that's so
again,
frightening.
That sort of
that's so frightening.
Sorry, did you say fun or is that a pun?
Listen, it ain't and it's not a reality show, regardless of what you think it may right. be or what Trump's people are even saying outwardly, that it's the world's biggest reality show. It's the most important job on the planet, and somebody that is sitting in the chair needs to be competent, or at least more competent than the other one.
Yeah, I just thought that was a frightening statement.
Low bar. Oh, my God. Running mates, any news?
Nothing that I've heard. They kept it pretty well under taps. There was a national article about a congressman from L.A., Xavier Becerra, who's a really dynamic, charismatic speaker. He's fourth in leadership. He's another name that's put in there. Tim Kaine was kind of trying to tamp down any talk of him being in there. I guess on the Republican side, Rubio is now actively seeking the job while saying he's not. I don't know what's going on.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
Well, supposedly he had some of his aides reach out for Trump. And
oh, is this one of those deals where you publicly you say, not a chance, no yeah. way, and then you're drafted yeah. and you go, well, yeah. I can't say no.
Well, little Marco, but right. look at the guys that have no political careers left. Chris Christie and Marco Rubio yeah. are now with Trump.
Exactly.
Remember the little Marco?
Christie yeah. yesterday made fun of Hillary for calling out Trump. There weren't enough pots or kettles. It's like Christie with Bridgegate, Hillary's honesty, Trump's in lack of integrity. My head hurt.
I'm just hoping from all this comes some clarity, because this has really just been a disastrous cycle all the way around.
Do you have the Christie cut? Here's a little bit of that.
I find it ironic that Hillary Clinton is talking about transparency to anyone, given that she had her own email server that she used constantly and had her colleagues in the State Department use in order to avoid FOIA requests and any transparency to the public. So I hardly believe that Hillary Clinton's in any place to be giving a critique on transparency. And I think Donald's made it very clear. When his audits are complete, he'll release his returns. And if those audits are complete prior to Election Day, he'll release returns. If they're not, he won't.
It's unbelievable. You know, the bridge for Bridgegate ought to slam down on his fat head for making a statement like that.
You know, I'm obviously not a Hillary fan, but when are they going to learn that attacking Hillary doesn't really work that well? It hasn't worked since 94.
No, and here's the thing. The one thing Hillary Clinton could do and she won't do, Eric, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, if she stood up and looked the American public in the eye and said, I fully understand why the American public is concerned about whether or not I'm telling you the truth. I am going to do everything I can to rebuild that trust that many of you have lost in me. She'd win tomorrow.
With her fingers crossed behind her back?
Well, you could watch her hands. So, Eric, see if you can make that happen.
All right. Well, we got 6 months. We'll see what happens.
You still, I don't know why you had to the convention with us?
6 months. I don't know why you had to end with a threat. all right. Safe travels. A couple minutes before 8. Thank you, Pat Brady.
See ya. Thank you.
Pat_Brady and Eric Edelstein as well at AL Media.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9 as we continue 8:12 now. This is the Wintrust Community Banks Hour. And we have a special.
Best hour in broadcasting.
I'm sorry?
Woohoo! Best hour in broadcasting.
Well, what does that mean? You don't like the first 2 hours?
Yes.
What was that?
You got to do it all over again.
Of course that's not what I mean.
We have a special guest in studio and an old friend of yours, Dean.
Yeah.
Lovely and talented Jane Lynch is here.
Jane Lynch.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, sweetie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We're going to talk on the WGN Midday News tomorrow.
Yeah,
together.
I'm all WGN all day.
You know, it's funny. Jane's trying to be nice. She did tell me she wasn't going to show up for that interview, Dean. I didn't know what happened there.
Good to know ahead of time. Good to know.
So one of the things we're doing this morning is the great pizza test coming up. Here's why.
Yeah.
Because Jane is an avowed devotee. That's French for devotee. Of Aurelio's. You love Aurelio's.
Love it.
Now, we love Aurelio's, but we really, really, really love Lou Malnati's around here.
Very true. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we're big Lou Malnati's nuts.
Yeah.
So we have both for you to try this morning. And we're not asking you to pick one over there. Maybe you'll love both. Maybe you'll be more of a Lou's. Maybe you'll be more of an Aurelio's. But a little breakfast pizza coming up for you.
Is this a blind taste test, Steve?
No, she can see fine.
I can see fine, yeah.
Yeah. We'll blindfold her.
I threw another candidate in for Jane.
Oh, you did?
What's that?
Avanti's.
Oh, yeah.
For I'm Illinois State girl.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
The gondolas we were just discussing. Mm-hmm. That was the Sunday night meal when you couldn't get the meal in the dorms.
So you guys never had to eat. What's the you know, it's been a long time since I dropped out of college.
Yeah.
Ramen noodles. You didn't have ramen noodles
because
an Avani was like a dollar.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I did macaroni and cheese, though. It was 11 cents for a box of generic brand mac and cheese.
Good eating.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, Dave, when you went to college, it was all that 23 Skidoo, and everybody had to wear a suit and a hat.
That's right.
That was all
Charleston.
No,
Ma and Pa Ingalls went out and shot dinner and brought it back in.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. I'm kidding. I love you.
That was when he got home on break.
Now, I thought that Jane might be there, Steve, because you've relaunched karaoke on your show, and Jane is doing See Jane Sing.
Thank you for that plug.
Coming up. That's what
I
do,
the whole reason,
Jane,
for getting up this early.
That's what I do, Jane. I'm a plugger.
And eating pizza
plugger
with you. Thank you.
I'm a plugger.
I love it.
Lyric Opera.
Heard that about you.
Lyric Opera, June 17th and 18th. Explain what this is, because this is not how we know our
C-S-E-E. C-Jane
Sing. Like C-Jane Run, C-Jane Play, C-Jane Sing. You get it. I do this live music show that I've been doing for like the last year with Kate Flannery, who's also a Chicago gal. And we have a 5-piece band, and it is an absolute blast. We do everything from Irving Berlin to Nicki Minaj. We do a medley of songs that made you cry when you were kids. It's about an hour long. The band is amazing, and it's just one crazy song after another with a lot of inappropriate sexual references.
Kate Flannery from The Office, right?
Yes, she was Meredith the Drunk in The Office. She is my Kay Ballard if I would be Eve Arden.
That's how we describe Steve.
Yes. It's like looking in a mirror, right?
It really, 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 really true.
But to do this show at the Civic Opera House, Jane.
Yeah, I know. It's
like one of the most massive stages, gigantic formal arenas.
It is, but I think they're doing this thing where they make the audience on the stage.
Oh, cool.
And we're on, so I don't have to fill that house, praise the Lord. and we're doing two shows a day. But anyway, just being in that theater is a huge dream.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And coming home and being at the opera house is pretty cool.
Steve has this karaoke thing going on now. It's all about singing, where people, you know, singing in their car enter the contest.
We have our three finalists. We picked them yesterday. Tomorrow, the three finalists will be in the parking lot here at 7:20.
And they're on the phone.
They'll be in the parking lot on the phone, and they can't come upstairs. We're actually going to judge them in their cars. Oh. And then the winner will be allowed to take the elevator upstairs and come into the studio.
Maybe,
the rest have to go home.
They can find their way to the green room.
And then also be with us Sunday night at the Zanies in Rosemont when we do the live talk show on stage, which I wanted to call Late Night to Me, but I believe John renamed the Early Late Night Talk Show. So that'll be at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. So we got a little stand-up, and Rowan Anna will be there, and we'll have the singing going on. All right, Dean, when we come back in Rosemont, Zanies, it's zanies.com for tickets. When we come back, new Prince news. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards actually do really despise each other. Morley Schaefer calling it quits. Donald Trump's first house is for sale, because who wouldn't want a piece of the Trump? And a new national survey on superheroes, just part of what Jane Lynch will co-host when Dean talks show business.
I don't know if you heard two of those stories combining, that Morley Schaefer is going to be joining the Rolling Stones and still be the youngest guy in the band.
Right, right.
He really would be, wouldn't he? Yeah, he really would be. Yeah, that's wild.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name.
Dean's at Channel 9. Jane Lynch is here with us. See Jane Sing. I don't know where we get tickets for this. I don't see a ticket plug on my information here.
I have that information.
King of the plugs, Dean. How do we get tickets?
I have that information. You can go to Ticketmaster or call the Lyric Opera, 312-827-5600. Steve, I'm trying to decide if I want to go to the early or late show Friday, June 17th. Or the earlier late show on Saturday, June 18th.
I don't like making those decisions. I think you go to all four.
I'm going to go to all of them.
You go to all four.
You go to all four. Yeah. Do you sing every day?
Do I sing every day? Yeah. I mean, I always sing. I sing unconsciously.
Are you afraid of anything on stage? Does anything bother you?
In this show?
No, in general.
Dancing. Dancing. Which I don't do in this show, but if
I thought you meant this show.
What do you mean? The long
this show,
legs?
I'm scared to death of this show.
Well, you should be. Yes. The long legs and don't know if they're moving in the right places?
Exactly.
What is it?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And I have to let you know, in terms of my clumsiness, the second I got here, I'm walking out of the garage, or walking into the garage with the guy who's driving me, and I tripped and fell. On my knees.
You cut your hand.
Cut my hand. Felt
Good
like a big
God.
Doofus.
No.
It was an automatic door that clipped me and I went flying.
Can someone get Jane Lynch a Band-Aid?
You know, here's the thing. That's my daughter's
and a lawyer.
Tall.
And a lawyer.
Oh, yeah. Feel free to sue us because you were headed over here.
Sure.
My daughter is tall, and my daughter has fallen many times and thinks that, you know, she's too clumsy and all that. But it's not. It's just, you know, you got to move those long legs in a particular direction.
That's right.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and they can go askew very easily.
All right, so let's run through some show business, Jane, and feel free to comment on anything Dean tells us as we get edumacated here.
Sure.
What's the new Prince news?
New Prince news is that there may be a will after all. An author. A guy who is a New York Times best-selling author, who is a celebrity biographer, who is a documentary filmmaker, or I guess that would be documentary filmmaker, if I'm speaking
English. Documentarian, if you prefer.
I was going for a hybrid of both of them.
Oh, they were both good.
Anyway, he's working on a film right now documenting the last few days of Prince's life and is in Canada, where Prince lived. He lived for quite a while in Toronto. And he says that lots of sources there are telling them that Prince did have a will, that if they investigate more in Montreal, in Toronto, they will likely find it. And everybody is telling them that Prince was too much of a savvy business person to have not had a will.
All right, now let me just throw this in. Again, my knowledge is limited. I knew him off and on for a period of years. Well, the Prince that I knew, a musical genius, obviously, but didn't have a clue about business and didn't have enough good people running it for him. I hope your sources are right, because I would hope there is a will. Otherwise, it'll get even uglier.
Well, this is according to a fairly credible biographer. So we'll see. You know, as we say this every day when there's new information every day. Let's wait and, you know, get some information. You know, we can speculate all we want to right now.
Mick Jagger and Keith Richards hate each other?
Another book that I'm flaunting around. Allegations from a celebrity biographer. This one is from a new book that's called The Sun, the Moon, and the Rolling Stones. Journalist Rich Cohn, who traveled with the Rolling Stones for 20 years.
Wow.
And he says, behind the scenes, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards cannot stand each other. Bad feelings started in the 1980s, not helped at all by Keith Richards' autobiography that came out a couple of years ago called Life, in which he aired all of the band's dirty laundry, criticized Jagger's solo work, and my favorite part of the whole thing, his nickname for Mick Jagger, Her Majesty.
That's kind of funny, actually, but are you like me? Don't the one thing based on this news and the news of the week, wouldn't you love to hear a conversation between Ozzy Osbourne and Keith Richards? Wouldn't you love to have the two sit down and have a long talk? You need Rosetta Stone just for that.
Wouldn't be audible.
Translators from the UN to tell us what they're saying.
The great Morley Safer is retiring.
Yeah, this is, you know, I guess after 50 years of hearing that damn stopwatch ticking.
He's had enough. Yeah, somebody stop with the watch!
After 50 years, that's going to drive a guy nuts a little bit. Tick, tick, tick. 46 years on 60 Minutes, 50
that's
years
ridiculous.
With CBS. He says it's been a wonderful run. Time to say goodbye. I guess I sort of remember this when he used to report in the late 60s
from Vietnam with Walter Cronkite. That really is kind of what put him on the map. But since then, he has interviewed nearly 1,000 stories on 60 Minutes. They're going to do a big tribute to Morley Safer this coming weekend.
Never met him, did you?
I never have.
No, but always his work was tremendous and his writings was great. So far, Jane, you seem to agree with everything that Dean
says.
I'm
nodding a lot here.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot, too.
She's in pain. She's in a lot of pain from that fall.
I do feel badly about that.
That's all right.
There's a survey out about your favorite Marvel superheroes. Is the great Morley in there?
Oddly, did not turn up in this favorite superhero poll. But this is kind of interesting because there is a different favorite superhero for us here in the state of Illinois as the national favorite. The national favorite is Spider-Man on this new survey that's out from Ranker.com, which is kind of a funny thing. Spider-Man, Wolverine, Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk nationally, but here in the state of Illinois, Wolverine is the number one superhero.
Jane, do you have a favorite superhero?
No.
Are you into the superhero stuff?
No.
Do you go to any of the movies?
No.
How about Wonder Woman?
No.
Superman?
No.
All right.
Do you have an Iron Man outfit at the house you like to put on when you're alone?
Yes.
All right, then. Just wanted to double check. And what's the Trump thing that's up for sale today?
Well, Steve, as you know, I am realtor to the stars.
Yes, you are.
I'm very proud to you know, it's my side job because you can't really depend on this broadcast thing.
Isn't that how you met Jane initially? You showed her a couple of houses in Burbank, wasn't it?
I did. And I just because I look so damn good in a yellow blazer. so that's why I really do this
on
the side.
You and me both.
Donald Trump's first mansion is for sale in Greenwich, Connecticut. Steve, it's a bargain for you. 19,000 square foot Georgian colonial main house, 8 bedrooms, 13 baths, a 3-story rotunda foyer.
Sounds like my first apartment.
Because you need that if you have
right
hair
out of
like
college, right?
Yeah,
you need a 3-story rotunda foyer if you've got hair like that.
Sure.
Double grand staircase, formal rooms, a view of Long Island Sound.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? If those walls could lie. Oh, man. You know?
Home theater, putting green, multiple terrace, patios, tennis courts.
What's it listing as? Because you know I'll come in a little under the number.
Well, considering that it also has a private boat dock, I think I can get this for you at the asking price of $45 million.
Hmm. Would you accept $212,000?
Yes.
Wait, I got a 20. Hold on. We could start the kitty right
here. I'll give you $212,000 and I'll bulldoze it. Just to try to get the bad juju out of there. All right, buddy. Well, that's great. So when will you see Jane tomorrow?
Jane's going to be on the WGN Midday News tomorrow.
Yeah, there around noon, huh?
It's going to be right around noon tomorrow. So we'll talk more about her show that is coming to the Civic Opera. Two shows June 17th, two shows on the 18th. Civic Opera House, the beautiful, where the Lyric Opera performs. Ticketmaster or 312-827-5600, as it says on this tattoo that I now have on my forearm.
Very nice. You are the king of plugs. Thank you, buddy.
See you tomorrow, and see you tomorrow, Jane.
You sounds great. Looking forward to it.
There you go. And we're going to do the great pizza test coming up here in a second.
Coming up, yep.
Well, our favorite Lou Malnati's.
Jane's favorite Aurelio's.
Going head-to-head here. And we'll make her eat a full pie of each.
Yeah.
Stand by for both.
Not a problem.
At 8:30 or 8:30, we'll come back and get the big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You are about to board the Sioux Sylvester Express. Destination? Horror.
Get a haircut? Looks awful.
You do with your depressing little group of kids what I did with my wealthy elderly mother. Euthanize it. That was the most offensive thing I've seen in 20 years of teaching, and that includes an elementary school production of Hair.
What do you want, Ladyface?
Well, I may buy a small diaper for your chin because it looks like a baby's ass. This is what we call a total disaster, ladies. I'm going to ask you to smell your armpits. I'd love to stay and chat, but I got a satellite interview. That's lingo again. For an interview, be a satellite.
I got to say, Jane Lynch, you work the pause better than just about anybody since Carson. There's a skill to the pause, isn't there?
Yes.
Just worked it on me. Little best of glee there. We were asking this off the air. When people stop you, what do they recognize you most for? Is it glee?
Yeah, it's glee, but it's a variety of things. Charlie's Therapist and Two and a Half Men, a lot. Hollywood Game Night, of course.
40-Year-Old Virgin.
40-Year-Old Virgin. Role Models. If it's a
about that Role Models, the Paul Rudd movie.
Yes, and yeah, and so was 40-Year-Old Virgin. But yes, if the young man who's coming up to me is between like 18 and 22, it's usually Role Models.
What does it say for the 55-year-old who also goes, yeah, Role Models, cool.
My mom says, 2.5 men.
Sandberg, you got one?
Does anyone ever say that you look like Candace Olsen?
Yes, I've been accused of being her. People have come up to me and said, I love your show on TV. And I say, well, thank you very much. They say, I love what you did with that kitchen in the Georgian restoration home. And I went, well, that's not me.
Are you sure that Candace Olsen hasn't just inhabited you in some form? And taken?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Who's to say?
You're having more fun than ever?
I am. I'm having a blast.
Hollywood Game Night, how long does that take to do? Do you guys do a bunch of them in a day?
We do. We'll do two. We do them on weekends, and we'll do two on Saturday, two on Sunday, and we usually get an order for 10. So we'll do one on a Wednesday.
So it's one of those shows, too, where I know in the first few episodes, you know, the agents and the managers and stuff are kind of watching. And then it gets a little buzz. And then I'm sure everybody's calling the producers going, hey, you got to get my guy on.
Yeah,
you got to get my girl on.
Absolutely.
Because you have no problems filling those couches now.
We don't. No. No, we have a lot of people who
But what about your buddies, your pals, people that call you up and go, Jane, people it'd be so great to be on this. Because people want to do their show because it's fun.
And, you know, I have no power over there at all. I have suggested people and no.
We should be on it.
You yeah. absolutely should
cool?
be on it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not big enough celebrities, though.
Well, no,
no
we
you're
are.
Not. I can tell you that right now.
You know, the truth really hurts. It's really bad. That's why I'm calling my biography How to Get to the Middle and Stay There.
I love it.
All right, See Jane Sing. It's coming to the Lyric Opera, June 17th and 18th. Best way to get information on tickets and get your tickets even is lyricopera.org, June 17th and 18th. Two shows both nights.
Yes, exactly.
With your friend Kate Flannery.
With Kate Flannery, our band, a five-piece band, the Tony Guerrero Quintet, and it's just like an hour and 20 minutes of rollicking fun.
Cabaret style seating, which is cool. You got couches, you got tables, you got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. Yeah, I'm so excited to come home with the show. We've been all over the country and we've been very excited to do the Lyric. You know, I hosted their gala 2 years ago and that's when we started talking about this.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that was really fun. You know, I've never been to the opera. Shame on me, but I've never ever been to the opera. And I should probably do that on Sunday. I wonder if there's anything going on here. But I should probably see an opera in my lifetime. And, you know, I used to work at the Civic Opera House, and I was fired from there.
What happened?
I was hired
You saw a different direction than they were going
yeah,
in?
Exactly. I wanted to answer the phones differently. I was answering the phones, and I had gotten the job through an employment agency, and I was just out of college. Then I got cast in a summer Shakespeare company thing where we were going to travel. And so I knew I was going to do that and that I was going to quit. But it didn't strike me that that would be an uncool thing to do since they paid an employment agency for me. So word got around that I was doing this because I naively was saying, hey, I'm going to
guess what I got.
That's what I got. And then they called me into the office and said, you know, we have to let you go. And they wouldn't say why. And I can't tell you how it attacked my self-esteem and how sad it made me. Even though I knew it was because of that, it was just...
So you did know. You didn't have to have somebody come up to you and go, Jane, hello.
Right. I did. I knew it was, but still, I felt terrible being fired. And
well, at least you're over it now.
Yeah, I'm totally over it.
Give her a call and go, you know who I am?
Exactly.
You know, the other thing we were talking about, too, off the air a moment ago, you get to L.A. in 93,
yeah. 93, yeah.
And Chris Guest's first movie with you is when?
1999. But I did a commercial with him in 1998.
But in that spread, you know, you're doing guest spots here and there. You hit a few things.
Yes.
But did you ever come close to going, it's not going to happen?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that I was very happy doing what I was doing. I always had one eye looking at, oh, when am I going to be famous? When am I going to get the job that's going to make me rich? That kind of a thing. But I really loved what I was doing. I was doing a lot of sketch comedy in theaters. I had a great group of friends, a great creative group of friends. I was doing commercials and voiceovers and the occasional guest spot on TV. I was making a very nice living. So I didn't feel, I mean, when it did happen, when I got the Chris Guest movie, it was huge.
Right.
It was a huge thing, but mainly because I wanted to work with him. So, you know, I swear to you that if all this went away tomorrow, I'd come back home and I'd do theater.
Lucky girl. Yeah, you've had a pretty good run already, and it's really just starting to peak now.
Oh, well, that would
because
be
nice, everybody's offering you jobs.
Yeah, it's nice. It is. It's a really nice thing.
It is nice. And you got a new Chris Guest one that's coming out?
We do. It's called Mascots, and it's coming out in the summer on Netflix, and it's about the world of non-professional mascots who are mascots for, like, you know, AAA baseball teams and college basketball. And they like the Christopher Guest movies, all of them, they culminate in some kind of a competition or a performance. And this would be the competition between the mascots that actually occurs. You can see it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's true. There is a mascot off.
Really funny to watch.
Yeah.
And, of course, just as in all of his movies, these are very driven people who in this little subculture who are trying to get the brass ring.
And the really cool thing he does, a really smart thing he does, is he always mixes up the chemistry with everybody.
Yes.
Right? The,
mm-hmm.
the players move in different directions. And
different.
You know what I love is Eugene Levy. And
he's not in this.
Oh, come on.
Eugene and Catherine are doing Schitt's Creek.
Oh,
and
that's
I did not
right.
just swear on the radio.
No, that's an actual
that
show.
The name of the show.
S-C-H. Yeah.
They could not get out of it to do this. And I know they
that
tried.
Sucks.
It really does. So don't see the movie, Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
I'm in it, all right?
I feel like I've got to support you, but only through a limited lens.
Okay,
yes,
all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my partner in this is Ed Begley Jr., and it was an absolute blast. He is amazing.
He's very funny.
He's a very funny guy.
Very funny.
So
it's right.
everybody but those two, and I know that's kind of a bummer.
And I loved your book, too. Your book
Thank
is
you.
So good, and I love the fact that you're so close with your family. You stayed grounded.
Yeah.
You got the Chicago roots.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because I always hate when cheesy, cliched interviewers go, the Midwest upbringing, the foundation. But there is something
there is
coming
something
from, you know, a foundation of family and everything mm-hmm. else. Because good people and bad people, I don't know if you know this, can come from anywhere.
They sure can. They sure can. One of the things that in showbiz is that people say the Chicago actors are pretty special and pretty unique in that. And this one customer said to me, we are the only people she knows who actually hangs up their clothes in our dressing rooms. I guess everybody else takes their clothes off and throws them on the floor, whereas we're used to being in the theater where if you throw your costume on the floor, when you come back the next night, it's going to be on the floor still.
Well, but I do think that's a real measure of character, how you treat people who take care of you, whatever that means in your life.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
By the way, the book Andrea mentioned, Happy Accidents.
Thanks, Steve.
Get an extra copy. You'll lose one.
Yep.
And that way you'll have a backup plan.
Right.
Great pizza test in a moment.
Oh, yeah. Big pizza test coming
Great
up.
Great pizza
coming
test
up.
In a moment. Big pizza challenge coming up. You can cut the tension with a knife in here, can't you?
Yeah, literally.
I mean, it's vicious. Yeah, there you go. I wrote this. Little touch of the islands, a little hip-hop. And as a black entertainer, this is the music of my people.
Amen.
You know, Jane Lynch is here, but Jane Lynch is here, but I gotta say, we've got another hilarious star coming up at 9:10, Ewan McGregor. And if you've not seen the comedy of Ewan McGregor, I'm telling you. So
no,
he'll be on about 9:10.
It's good pizza.
And Elise Glink next hour as well. All right, Jane, before we run out of time,
yes.
You had mentioned, and I appreciate it, Andre appreciates it, we really appreciate the fact that you're a friend of the show. It's very nice of you because at your level, you don't have to return our calls.
No, I don't.
No.
And I do.
No, and it's very nice of you. I know you have people return our calls, but you don't have to have your people return our calls.
Well, I was just saying, just quickly, I was just telling them that I do radio all over the country,
sure.
and you guys are unique and alone in how witty and smart.
Well, that's nice.
And it's a wonderful show. You're head and shoulders above everybody.
It's very sweet, but are you saying that because we got your pizza?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, you know we are nuts for Lou Malnati's.
I know you
And that's not a knock on Aurelio's. We love Aurelio's, but just, you know, we're Lou's people.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but we just asked you to try both.
Yeah.
And you're not going to offend us if you stick with your Aurelio's friends, but you're biting into both here. Yep. You love the cheese. You love the sauce.
Oh, my God. The Lou Malnati's is a little bit of a deep dish, and the cheese is amazing, the texture. That's really, really good. I like it very much.
All right.
The crust is great.
And Aurelio's, you're still nuts for Aurelio's.
Oh, my God. The cheese, the sauce, as you say, the sauce is what?
Yeah. The sauce is infused with crack at Aurelio's, we believe, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But not in an illegal way, just in an addictive way.
In fact, I just get the cheese at Aurelio's because the cheese is so damn good.
So you just go in and order cheese.
Mm-hmm, cheese
I'd like
pizza.
A box of cheese.
I want a box of cheese. Exactly. Absolutely.
All right. So you love Lou's. You
I
love
do love
Aurelio's.
Lou's, and I love,
why pick?
Yeah. Why, well, I won't then.
Yeah. Why? Yeah.
Internally, I've just chosen, but I'm not going to let you know.
Yes. No, you're still nuts for Lou's. You're nuts for Lou's. We're all nuts for Lou's here. But you understand. We can still be friends.
Lou's.
We can all still get along.
Mm-hmm. There can be two great Chicago pizzas.
Right.
Why do we limit ourselves to one?
Jane Lynch.
Jane,
and
if you consider being a write-in candidate in the 2016 presidential
election.
Oh,
hell, election. I'd vote for her.
Right.
I'd vote for you right now. See Jane Singh, mm-hmm. Jane Lynch, and her friend Kate Flannery tearing it up June 17th and 18th at the Civic Opera House.
Please join us. We'd love to see you.
LyricOpera.org. And a new Christopher Guest movie coming.
Yes.
You're going to be on Channel 9. This is a big break for you. Channel 9 tomorrow with Dean. So I'm really glad that your people were able to get that done. Mm-hmm. And do you have any secret projects you can't tell us about?
No, not really. Nothing going on. Just going to do this big monster tour in June.
Okay.
And then I'm going on vacation in July.
Where are you going?
Montecito with the family.
Can we come?
Absolutely.
Sweet.
We go, it's right by Santa Barbara. It's right next door. And the family comes out from Chicago and we all either rent a house or whatever. And it's a beautiful area. It's just gorgeous.
We'll be bikini ready by then after all this pizza.
Right.
I agree with you, but I still think it's an odd look for me. I'm going to be honest with you. I like to go in and get the big and tall bikini, but it doesn't work for me. Thank you so much for doing this.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And good luck with See Jane Sing. Again, Lyric Opera. And best way to get tickets and information for it is lyricopera.org. We'll take a break. Come back. More coming up, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Elise Glink joins us in about 10 minutes. One of the finest to ever do it. If you can introduce somebody that way in any field, it's pretty good. I don't care if it's plumbing. I don't care if they're an athlete or a great actor, Ewan McGregor. You know, I've been lucky. I've met everybody. I've never met Ewan McGregor. This is such a treat to have you on the show. How are you, sir?
It's nice to be here. I'm not sure I've ever been introduced with the word plumbing in this. That's the first for me. That's good.
Come on, some of the roles have got to be like plumbing.
I don't want to go into that right now, not this early in the morning.
So if you remember, I'm great, thank you. If you remember Ewan McGregor all the way back to Trainspotting, if you're really a Ewan McGregor fan, you'll remember something called Shallow Grave, which is tremendous.
Loved it.
Big Fish, Black Hawk Down, Moulin Rouge. And now he decided to just kick back a little bit and play Jesus Christ. Tell me about Last Days of the Desert.
Last Days is a beautiful, quiet, slow movie. It's directed by Rodrigo Garcia, who I met and I liked very much on a holiday, funnily enough. And afterwards, he sent me the script. He said, "Look, I'm embarrassed to send it. You know, we met socially and we were on holiday, and I don't want to be the guy who comes at you with a project after we've met like that. But I've got a project, and I'd like you to read it." So he didn't tell me anything about it, and I started reading the script. And it begins with a description of a man walking in the desert. And it doesn't tell us where or when or who he is. And I was intrigued, like, page after page, just of descriptions of a man walking, a man sleeping under a tree, a man shading from the sun, a man cold at night. And I didn't know who he was. And then he sees somebody off in the distance. And as this other person gets closer and closer, he recognizes that it's himself. He's seeing himself. And I'm reading the script going, what is this? Maybe it's some kind of myth, fantasy. I don't know what it is. And then I turn the page, and the first line of dialogue is this other person that he meets who looks like him. And it says Lucifer, and then the line of dialogue. And I thought, oh, I see, now I know who we are and where we are. And I was totally entranced by that. I was just enwrapped in it by that point. And we shot it very, very quickly. It's a beautiful story that Rodrigo invented a story about Christ coming across a family in the desert during the 40 days and 40 nights when he was out there, and for the, you know, the passage in the Bible about the temptation. And so it's not a biblical story. It's not we didn't set out to make a gospel movie. It's a story, really, I think, about fathers and sons. And Rodrigo sat down to write about fathers and sons and wrote about the ultimate father and son relationship, I suppose, God and Jesus.
It's Last Days in the Desert. It opens this weekend. It'll open wide. The more people that go see it, the more people are going to see this movie. That, in fact, is a fact. Now, as an actor, when you approach this, and I don't know how to ask the question without setting up a spoiler of some sort, but maybe it's more about process. You're playing you as Jesus and Jesus' conscience in battle with temptation, or are you literally playing Jesus and the devil?
Yes, well, I was literally playing Jesus and then the devil, and the devil appears to him as in his own form. And, I think we were very clear about that. We were, you know, how people how people see it themselves is totally up to them. I like that about art and movies and stories, that are, that people are absolutely entitled to their own interpretation. And one interpretation could be that it's Jesus and, like you say, his conscience or his other, or his inner voice or his doubt that's sort of manifest in front of him. But I was playing Jesus, who's the Son of God, and then the devil who comes to tempt him in the and to try and put a, his main job is just to try and get inside his head and put him off his path, you know.
I don't know who has your ear or who you listen to when it comes to roles, but I'm amused by the fact that you get this pitch and then you go to somebody who you trust and you go, what'd you think if it played Jesus and the devil? You know, is that when your friends go quit drinking?
Well, I did that 15 years ago, so they can't say that to me anymore. Well, I don't think anybody was surprised that I was into it. I mean, it's such a very tiny, that's what I love about it. It's such a small movie. We had maybe 20 people in the crew, and we shot in this beautiful desert, Anza Borrego Desert, the southeast of Los Angeles, for only 25 days. We shot 5 weeks, five-day weeks, and it was so tiny and small and beautiful. It was shot by Chivo, who Emmanuel Lubezki, has won the Academy Award for the last 2 years running, three maybe even, and who's a great friend of Rodrigo, the director. So there was a great, talented team making this tiny film, and it was just super concentrated. It was nice to, it was nice out in the desert because there was no cell signal, and so when we go out there really early, we go out there in the morning to try and shoot the sunrise. So we'd be out there about 4:30 in the morning, and then you know, we would be out there all day. We'd try and shoot the sunset as well. So it was a quiet, meditative time. It was really nice.
It sounds beautiful. I know you got to run and talk to other people, but it's really nice to get a chance to hear about the new movie and just to talk to you. I'm a big fan, and my best to you and your family, and I hope we cross paths again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
That's Ewan McGregor on the Steve Cochran Show.
You know what's amazing about him? Not only, he's a phenomenal actor, but I loved,
amazing.
Did you see Moulin Rouge?
Sure.
Loved it. He's a great singer, too.
Yeah.
Singer, actor.
You know, he's multi-talented. I like to limit what I do just to being a smartass. I like to not branch out from that too much, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I have limited skill in one area. He has multiple heavy duty skills in five or six. Right. So that's why he'll be at the Academy Awards and I'll be on a couch.
You'll be a seat filler, maybe.
On a good day. It's 9:17. We'll come back. At least Glink will join us in a moment. We'll talk a little money. Lots to do before 10 and Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money.
.921, the Johnny Manziel, remember this when he got drafted? The Johnny Manziel money fingers. Didn't catch on so much because he can't seem to stay out of trouble. But I still love this song. I could hear this song all day. And this is the official, legally mandated walk-up music for Elise Glink wherever she goes. You walk into Jewel this place, right?
It does. It's amazing how that happens.
Do you remember, how'd you ever get interested in finance and money and real estate and all that? Did you have somebody in your life that, like, you go, well, that's cool, I want to do that?
Well, my grandfather, when I was little, used to watch WCIU. They used to have the stock market ticker show,
sure,
like, all day long. He would sit there and flip between that and the Cub game. And, you know, usually,
and depending on how the market was doing, that would determine how much Cub game he watched? That would be a tough day if it was the old Cubs and a bad day at the market.
Yeah, it would be bad. I'm sure there were plenty of days like that. He just was always interested in that, and it was kind of nice because my grandfather wasn't in a big, you know, didn't make a lot of money, wasn't a big financier or anything. He just managed his own money really well, and he had one great rule that I've passed along for years to people, which is when it doubles, when your stock price doubles, sell half.
That's smart.
And
it's very smart.
Not that long ago, I heard from somebody who said that they had made a ton of money over the years that I've been on,
sure,
the radio.
It's very smart.
Just following that, because most of us don't know when to take it off the table.
Yep. That's a great rule of thumb for an impossible equation, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And my grandfather was sort of interesting because he just followed it along, and built this tremendous
pot of money that he, when he died, he left to my mother, my uncle, and that was very, very helpful because it was right around when my dad died.
And when did you learn about money? I mean, was it college or did you do it on your own?
Well, I sat there with him. You know, I used to watch the show. I liked to hang out. My grandfather was awesome. And we would watch everything from like the 1950s colorized musicals sure. to the stock market report to the Cubs games. And he would talk to me about money. And so I think that was a place I learned from it. My mother, Sue Glink, very, very smart woman about money. She's done really well with it. So kind of picked it up at home. And a lot of people don't.
And a lot of women in particular don't. And still, there are far too many women, and this is not of a certain generation, there are far too many women who leave finance to the man in their life, which I think is a terrible idea.
Yeah, having a man in your life is not a financial plan. I just want to be really clear about that.
Yeah.
It's just not. You have to really understand how the money comes in, where it goes out, and what are some basic but smart choices you can make along the way. Those little decisions can have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of impact 10, 20, 30 years down the line.
The other thing I don't entirely understand, and I don't want this to sound judgmental, even though that's what I do between 6 and 10, but separate checking accounts, once you're in a relationship with somebody, okay, if you're in a relationship with somebody, it's a committed relationship. Okay, if you got to have separate checking accounts because it's convenient or something, you at least ought to share, I know where your money is and you know where my money is.
Yeah, it's not even about where the money is. It's more about how you're both spending and what you're both spending
it on. That's
what I
mean. It's a joint operation.
It is. I don't understand the whole separate checking thing. I really don't. And when I look at it, I mean, Sam and I, my husband and I, we've been married 26, going to be 27 years. We just started out and said, you know what? We're all in.
Right.
You know, you bring a little more to the table now. Maybe I'll bring a little more to the table later on. But either way, this is a joint effort. We're all in. And they didn't have credit scores. That's how old we are. But when we got married. But today, people need to share. What's your credit score? How much money is in the bank?
And you're smart to say, too, put both names on both accounts and on everything as well. When my father passed away, I went through a similar story, Elise, that, you know, my parents had a wonderful marriage 45 years, but his name was pretty much on everything. And when she was just trying to pay the credit card bill or, you know, do something with the safety deposit box or something, it's in his name. So she had to go through hoops to just get to, you know, what was hers for 45 years.
Everything you just described is the literal definition of rigmarole.
Yes.
Which is
exactly.
A generational word.
Exactly.
All right. Sandberg, checking accounts separate?
Well, yes, separate. Because how do you surprise each other with anything if you're seeing all each other's activities?
Correct.
27 years in, I got to say, I'm not so sure either of us get surprised, although we do because I'm just such a space cadet about everything else in my life. So no. Sam does manage to surprise me on occasion. I think that there are ways to where you can take some cash. I know this is strange, but there's green stuff. It's called cash.
What?
And it's separate from your debit account because that's a card. So actually, there are ways to be careful and fun. I don't know if you can plan far out surprises, but you can certainly do them.
Okay.
Be a little more clever.
Yeah,
and creative.
You have fun money. My husband and I have fun stash money that he doesn't know how much I have. I don't know how much
and
he
you know
has.
What the ultimate yeah. truth is with joint accounts. There's usually somebody that pays more attention to it than the other anyway.
Well, what I really encourage people to do is you should both be checking your online credit card statements frequently.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason you need to do that is just for fraud protection these days. So Sam has it set up talking about surprises. I get surprised every time this happens because I make a charge and instantaneously I get a text from Sam. Is this you?
Oh, no.
I'm like, yes, that's
yes, he's
honey,
human lifelock.
Over at Macy's, that's me.
He's an individual lifelock. You've got like a one-man lifelock.
I have married the very best man I could ever imagine
wow.
my whole life for me.
Holy man.
I just don't want to have to answer for $225 jeans.
Okay.
Oh, all right, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. You want to hide your end.
All right. You know what's funny? Years ago for WGN, I went. They had me take a camera crew, and we went on Michigan Avenue. And I interviewed women about whether they were hiding their makeup purchases from their husband. Like, that was, and how much were they? And when did you feel like you had to draw the line before they said, that's the beauty budget? Really? And in their head, they were doing some sort of calculation. Am I getting enough for that money?
Right.
I don't know. You didn't
right.
want that to happen. And so right. they were like, oh, well, I hide it when I do other things and I don't. Yeah.
No, it's true. When
Come
I do
on.
My taxes and you do, you know, the hair and the makeup and everything, and it exceeds more than what you make on your side job, it's going, oh, maybe I should cut back on the beauty purchases.
Yeah, no.
I agree with you. Hey, quick question.
Sure.
If you have a little bit of extra money, say maybe just a couple hundred dollars or Where's the best place to put it nowadays? Either I know it used to be in the old days a savings account, you can get 5-6% interest, mutual funds.
Huh. In your purse?
I know when I was a child.
Put it in your purse?
Yeah, where's my
get more money in a mattress?
I mean, yeah,
where do you put it? So yeah. We just moved some money from an account, a savings account that was earning zero, literally 0.00.
Right. So they were just holding your money?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were holding it. I mean, if I were in Europe, I'd be losing money on that account. But we moved it to an online account. So there are companies like Discover Card, which has Discover Bank, which is a separate company, but same name. There are online banking accounts, and those will pay you the most. And so it's up to... Probably not even 1% anymore, but at least you're getting something rather than nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a good start. If you've got a longer term horizon, right, you've got maybe 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, and then you're going to use it maybe for a down payment, you might want to consider just putting it into an index mutual fund. Super cheap. I want the super cheap ones. There's only two. Vanguard is super cheap. Fidelity is super cheap for the basic index mutual funds. I would try those. And that's the longer term money, because then you have ups and downs in the market and you don't want to start not sleeping at night.
Right.
All right. I've got to ask you before we run out of time. There was big news this week in the financial world because Donald Trump wanted to do deals on America's debt.
Yes. What a great idea. Why didn't anybody else ever think of that?
Yeah. I think Alexander Hamilton came back to life just so he could kill himself over this. But can you explain in terms for the rest of us why that's a terrible idea?
Where do I say? I don't think we have enough time before the break. First of all, America is the last repository of solid debt in this world, I think. And that's why our interest rates are so low. People are flocking to this country because our debt is safe. We always pay our bills. And if you throw it out there that suddenly we might not be paying our bills, that is going to be an incredibly destabilizing force for the entire world, period. Is that strong enough?
That's pretty strong, and that is really the summation of all of it. America, this is the foundation of the house.
It is.
The financial house that that all of the world lives in. You put a crack in that foundation, hell hath no fury.
If you can't trust that the U.S. dollar is going to repay your loans, we are in bigger trouble than anyone can ever imagine. So I would encourage Mr. Trump to not go down that path.
Other than that, everything Trump says is fine.
Oh, yeah. And I can't wait to see his taxes, which I'm sure he's going to release next week.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. He won't back down on it.
No, he'll release them.
And are you aware of any accountant who would tell a client who is paying that accountant, you can't do this or that with your taxes related to an audit? Because I'm not.
The IRS has said that anybody may release their own taxes at any point in time.
Right.
I think that's about as clear as it can be. But I'll tell you, if Mr. Trump does release his taxes, I'm going to come back here and you and I can go line by line on air, because that'll be the funniest thing that we do all day long.
I think the two things you're going to see is the $10 billion he thinks is worth is in some other form of monopoly money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something probably, now I'll give him credit, it's probably close to a billion based on everything I've seen.
I think it might be a couple of billion.
But secondarily to that, I think he's also concerned about his lack of charity. And there is a significant sources that say, yeah, the guy doesn't give any money away.
Well, you got to give it home first, I think, is what his motto is, right? America first, Trump first, home first.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, Mar-a-Lago, who's going to keep the lights on?
Right. It's hard. That guy, that butler, that old butler who's been there 30
Jeeves.
Years. Jeeves. That
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He flips it on and off.
I know you got to run and do some other stuff, but thank you as always.
Best to see you.
Nice to see you, Elise Glink. ThinkGlink.com for all things Elise. All right. We'll do this. 931, big story next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Here are some more texts that came in. Andre was on a flight this weekend where the pilot asked a girl if she'd go to the prom with a kid on the plane and did it by prefacing it with, I have a very important announcement. And Andrea rightfully thought that the plane was under attack.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
630 texter, you don't want to hear Leslie Nielsen come on and say, is anyone a pilot?
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
312 texter.
We don't have enough fuel to get to St. Louis, so we're landing here.
Yeah. What?
These are all bad. This is what goes through your mind.
Texter from the 708. You don't want to hear your pilot go, anybody know what the big red button does? It's not me. I'm asking for a friend.
Don't touch it.
Wasn't
no,
touch it.
No, don't touch it.
I was just pointing at it.
Well, don't point even.
Don't even point.
No.
9:43. We continue. I don't know the right analogy for it, but maybe this will work. Remember when You got a substitute teacher back in like elementary school or middle school where you had the same teacher every day for something.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a teacher you had the majority of the day, and the substitute teacher was really cool. And you didn't want the original teacher to come back.
Your homeroom teacher.
Well, you remember the other day when Ted Cruz came back to work?
Oh, yeah.
It had to be bad for little Teddy back at work because nobody wanted him to come back. It was really tough for Congress because the members of the Senate are going, well, we don't want him to be president, but we don't want him coming back here. Mm-hmm. And if he is in the White House, we won't have to see him that much.
Although I got sent to the principal's office one time when we had a substitute teacher. I asked her how to spell a word, and she said, look it up in the dictionary. So you know what I said? How am I supposed to look it up in the dictionary if I don't know how to spell it?
Wow.
Ooh, you wow. smart.
I was lippy.
She smacked
grade.
You? Because she could hit you then.
No, I had to go to the principal's office, and then I think I cried. They said, it's okay, Andrea, and then I went back to class.
Right.
So and I didn't cry. I just got...
You faked it.
Teary-eyed.
Oh, yeah. I had a teacher in sixth grade named Pauline Davidson. Mm. Sixth grade, you're how old? Is that...
About 11, 12.
Yeah, 11. So that would have been what, 1972? Mm-hmm. Pauline Davidson was 178 then, and she was mean. mean. As a matter of fact, she looked like the Wicked Witch from Oz. Remember the Wicked Witch in full makeup?
Yeah. Green face?
Yeah, it's a whole deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had a broom. Yeah. And she's really mean. She spilled coffee on her own lap and had to go to the hospital.
Oh.
Now, you're a little kid. You don't know when you're a little kid. We just knew we were happy she wasn't there. She was replaced. And tell me if you can name a substitute teacher. Mrs. Sanders came in. No relation to Bernie.
Okay.
Mrs. Sanders came in, and I don't know if she was, you know, this was again 1972, and she was a little bit younger, and I don't know if she was maybe doing a lot of weed in the car on the way to work or whatever, but all she wanted to do was play comedy records the entire time. She didn't teach us a thing. And I'm thinking, I hit the jackpot. This is so great, because I was a pretty studious kid. I know that's hard to believe.
Maybe this is where it all started.
The comedy thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But she came in and played comedy records all the time. And I just remember one of the saddest days was when Mrs. Davidson recovered and came back to work. So, you know, I feel for Congress as Ted Cruz is back at work this week. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's in the news because Donald Trump says, oh, the banning all Muslims thing? Oh, no, that was just a thought. I'm not saying we got to do it. It's just an opinion. Yeah, and the tax returns? Well, I don't know. I mean, there's really nothing in there. I mean, you guys trust me, right? Right. I'm the Trumpster. Why wouldn't you trust me? So we had a little montage courtesy of MSNBC of the Trump flip-flops. And again, all I ask if you're supporting Donald Trump is that you give these a listen before you head for the voting booth in November. Here we go.
I think Hillary would be a terrible president. She was the worst Secretary of State in the history of our nation. Why would she be a good president?
Hillary Clinton, I think, is a terrific woman. I mean, I'm a little biased because I've known her for years.
You support her?
I just like her. I like her and I like her husband.
I'm almost more disappointed with the Republicans. They have to toughen up on Obamacare, which is a total lie and which is a total and complete disaster.
Healthcare.
Liberal on healthcare. We have to take care of people that are sick.
Universal health coverage.
I like universal. We have to take care. There's nothing else. What's the country all about if we're not going to take care of our sick? Let me tell you, everybody wants to pay as little as possible, including Warren Buffett, by the way, despite what he says. And somebody said, what's your tax rate? I don't know. I pay as little as possible. I would tax people of wealth, of great wealth, people over 10 million by 14.25%. This tax would raise approximately $5.7 trillion, which happens to be our national debt.
Well, I'm very pro-life and feel strongly about it.
I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion. I hate it. I hate everything it stands for. I cringe when I listen to people debating the subject. But you still, I just believe in choice.
No matter how ardent a Donald Trump supporter you may be, and no matter how much you want to throw all politicians under the bus, that's not made up. That's Donald Trump factually stating what he stated and then what he restated. So keep it in mind. That's all I'm asking. 9:48, back after this on 720 WGN.
I'm just saying that
Hillary Clinton's
the opposition to her, the negatives against her have been built up by Donald Trump just hammering away at her. And up until now, at least, he has not been going after you as much.
Hey,
she's
Andrea,
fighting two
Andrea.
Big candidates, and you're fighting
oh,
one.
Really? Oh, really? Andrea, in every state that we have won, in 19 states, we have had to take on the entire Democratic establishment. We've had to take on senators and governors and mayors and members of Congress. That's what we have taken on. So please do not moan to me about Hillary Clinton's problem.
Ah, you don't want to make Uncle Bernie angry. You won't like Uncle Bernie when he's angry. You can understand, can't you? I mean, it's regardless of the fact that Bernie Sanders' policies, there's no math in the world that makes them add up correctly. But you can certainly understand why Bernie Sanders supporters are upset. He's won 19 or 20 primary contests, and he's not within shouting distance of first place. So when he says the system is rigged, well, yeah, it is. It absolutely is. The superdelegate piece of the system is to secure that the person who the Democratic establishment wants to win the primaries will, in fact, win. And if you believe polls, and obviously you can pick any poll you want, but if you believe polls, in poll after poll after poll after poll, Bernie Sanders beats Trump by way more than Hillary beats Trump. But that doesn't matter in the big picture to the Democratic establishment. That's one side of the argument. The other side of the argument is they know they do the math as well, they Democratic leadership, and they go, well, you've been in Congress forever. Senator Durbin said this to us. There's not a thing Bernie Sanders has said in the campaign trail I haven't heard at lunch.
Right, for the past, what,
20 years. Yeah. So he said, and the Democratic establishment knows that Bernie Sanders' policies don't add up and the math doesn't work either. So while he may beat Trump by more, the Democrats feel that Hillary is a better shot as president to actually get something done.
And to actually beat Donald Trump, too.
And to beat Trump, yeah. So still beat Trump.
Yes.
But have a better shot at being president
right.
and getting it done. Just by way of an explanation. So we give you the old guy. How about the kids? Are the kids heard from in this? Here's a group of kids. Where did these kids come from? Because these are kids from New Zealand. Was this just local New Zealand TV that did this?
Yeah, local New Zealand TV. It's quite entertaining.
If you're wondering how the rest of the world is perceiving us, local television in New Zealand went out and picked a bunch of little kids and had little kids do some of their favorite Donald Trump quotes.
Let me tell you, I'm a very smart guy.
Please don't feel so stupid.
My IQ is one of the highest and you know it.
I do not bear a word.
My hair is 100% mine.
There's nobody like me. Nobody.
Barack Obama's birth certificate is a fraud.
It's a fraud.
You can never be too greedy.
I like China.
China.
I have many Chinese friends.
They live in my buildings all over the place.
I've never seen a thin person drinking Diet Coke.
Be careful lying, Ted, or I'll spill the beans on your wife.
When Mexico sends people,
they're not sending their best.
They're sending people that have lots of problems.
I'll build a great, great wall.
I'll make Mexico pay for that wall. Not my work.
Although, did the little one say, my wife or my life?
You know, well, it's funny, too, how they cleaned up the quotes for the kids. They're not sending their best people. It's better than criminals and rapists, certainly, when you're 10. It's 9:56. Bill and Wendy are next on 720 WGN.